still Kirby. Lovely check. Kirby!
Welcome back to the Sirky Nuskin Fight Club, your one-stop listen to all things Chelsea FCW and the legend that bikes to work and then scores a hat-trick on the same day. That's not the only thing we're going to talk about. I promise we still are the Fran Kirby Fight Club. I just thought that the performance warranted an extra special intro. I'm Mariam. I'm joined by Andrea. I promise we will talk more about Fran Kirby, but there's going to be a whole lot of Nuskin today and a whole lot of figuring out how we won 4-2 against Brighton. Andre, got to ask how you thought of that game.
I was like, wow, we're rebranding already.
Shout out.
I love it. It was a very frustrating game, especially in the first half, filled with a lot of frustrations, and especially against an opponent who, you know, has done things that we prefer not being done to us. Brighton is one of those teams. It's been Reading, it's been Brighton. You know, Reading's no longer in the league, or in that division. But yeah, the first half felt like this is going to be a very frustrating day. And then it turned out to be a fairly comfortable day. And then it got a little weird. I mean, 4-2 feels right, but also, you know, some good, some bad.
Okay, well, let's get straight into it. As you mentioned, a 4-2 win. It did start off a little bit shaky. We conceded in the 10th minute. Pauline Bremer, who's actually, you know, been doing quite well in the league so far, she opened the scoring. And as you say, up until like the 47th minute, it looked like this was going to be one of those games where we were going to have to eke out a result. But Sophie Nuskin, she came in, she got her first goal. I'm pretty sure it was extra time of first half, so maybe 47th minute. And then other side of the second half, 54th minute, she dives in straight away and she's got another goal. And then a third in the 74th minute, which is just the perfect hat-trick, perfect trio, really. And then if that wasn't enough, Aggie Beaver-Jones joins in on the party. She got her first senior goal for the club, which we love to see. And yes, there was a late goal for Brighton, Elizabeth Turland, who I believe I saw a stat about being one of the leading goal scorers in the WSL this season so far. Yeah. So not surprising. Not how we wanted to start and end the game, but in between, there was some good stuff in between. I'm going to get straight into the team news now. So the usual, we've been going back and forth, the back three and a back four, and this time around it was a three, or at least that's what the Chelsea FCW website likes to say. It was a back three. That's Bright, Buchanan and Carter. And then in the midfield, we had Perisay pushing up next to Ingle, Nuskin and Charles. And then up front, James, Kirby and Kerr. So those four changes made to the side after the 2-0 victory over West Ham. So Anne-Catherine Berger, who I didn't even mention, back in the six, Mucevic got the day off. And then we've got Buchanan, obviously, back in, who's been rotated. Perisay, and then, of course, Nuskin partnering with Ingle in the midfield. Before we even get into the game, like, you saw that lineup, those changes, given that Emma Hayes has kind of been rotating quite a lot. What were your thoughts?
My thoughts were what they usually are in the early season for Chelsea. Oh, Emma. She just does these things where, and to be fair, some of these were forced by perhaps Ashley Lawrence is still taking time to like settle in. So maybe you don't have her where you could go, you know, flat back four if you want, because she's been a little, you know, she's a great player, but, you know, not fully integrated, it seems. Guro, as we know, she's been out. I think just reported an ankle ligament injury. I think she's been in a boot recently, which is unfortunate. I hate that. So hopefully that's not too serious and she can be back sooner than expected. So some of it was injury related, some of it form related. You know, Aaron Cuthbert not ready to play either. So you do have to kind of figure it out. But I told a friend, it was Theo Lloyd Hughes, who I was, as soon as Brighton scored, he texted me and I was like, all right, hi, how are you?
he's waiting for it.
Yeah, he was. But then I told him, like, this is kind of like, this has all the makings of an Emma Hayes special. We start out with a back three. The team looks a little weird. Don't really know what to do. They end up scrapping, you know, in the first half. Then at halftime, she'll change to a back four. Things will be more comfortable, and then they'll go ahead and win. And that's pretty much what happened. So, like, we've been here before.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. Like, at some point, you just got to realize that we had the same conversations every season, beginning of every season. Emma Hayes I would like to say that at this point, she tries to get out all of the bad ideas, like, in the beginning. But there's been a couple times where that bad idea will resurface at the end of a season or in the middle of a Champions League campaign. So, you know, understandable you were feeling that way. As we said, Brighton's a bit of a weird opponent, just that that one that you lose against, always the one that stopped us from getting, you know, undefeated season a couple of campaigns ago. So a little bit strange, a little bit weird. Let's get straight into the defence. So as you mentioned, starting off with a back three, but even before that, let's talk about the goalkeeping situation, because at the moment it's a bit strange. We've got three keepers who are in the mix. They could start at any point. And AKB started tonight. Usually it would have been Mucevic. And I'm pretty sure Emma Hayes said that Hannah Hampton was very close to getting a start, but for whatever reason didn't get the start. So I think we've talked about AKB, maybe with Mia, looking quite strong and stable on the whole. In my head, I wouldn't necessarily blame her for conceding that first goal, but I think the second scored in the 90th minute, which we'll talk about later, started with a poor kick. Overall, what were we saying about her performance?
Yeah, I mean, her performance was okay, except for that last goal that ended up, she was at fault for, even though, you know, there was still some defending that could have been done, but it put the team in a bad position, which is something you don't want to do. You know, if this wasn't Brighton, maybe it's 4-3 and that makes it 4-4 against another team. Who knows? But or maybe you don't even score four goals. But yeah, I mean, the goalkeeper thing is the thing that continues to be the most intriguing thing, I think, with this team right now, is that I thought if Mucevic was going to start the season and she was going to get a run of games to show that, like, she's number one, and like we'd be able to tell, like, a definitive, here's number one, here's number two, here's number three, and Emma Hayes just will never let us get she will never let us make it like that simple. Like, it just, from week to week, I don't really ever know who's going to be behind the sticks, between the sticks. And I don't, like, on one hand, all these players deserve to play. They're very good. I think when it comes to distribution, I'd love to see Hannah Hampton. This could have been a Hannah Hampton game, because Chelsea had a ton of the possession, had a ton of the ball, and trying to figure out, like, her distribution is really, really good. It's the shot stopping that's problematic for her. But if you're limiting chances, maybe this is the type of game where you would want to see her. I do think Berger made some pretty good saves when she needed to, which you would expect from Berger. But I just, like, I don't know what you learn about Ancratch and Berger in a game like this, right? I think you could have, if you're looking to rotate goalkeepers, maybe this is one. But again, I don't know what Mays is doing with the goalkeeper position.
It's so interesting you say that. She definitely keeps us guessing. And you know, to the day I die, I will never understand what happened with Beth England. We will never figure it out. You know, it's one of those things. It's a lot that she tells us about, and there's a lot that she doesn't, and we can only speculate. But I do think it's interesting you mentioned there about distribution, because I'm going to talk about the first goal that we conceded, and it came from sort of the pressure of playing out from the back, and then there being confusion, because I think our midfield had pushed up a little bit, and suddenly all this space was available. And credit to Brighton, because they moved quite quickly. They saw that space was available. Bright was pushing across, and again, miscommunication happened. And then there was just this ball that kind of cut us so cleanly through the defensive midfield and the back three. And Bremer was there to tap it in from close range. Again, I don't think AKB is at fault there. It's really not her fault, but it was kind of worrying that early in the game that we were so confused about what was going on.
Yeah, that was not great. She basically just tore straight through the middle of the pitch, and nobody really tracked her. By the time Millie Bright started going after her, she was well beyond. I'll also say there's a suggestion that she was offside. Given how far she had run beyond the line before the pass happened, it looked offside. But also, anybody who feels definitive about it, I feel like, given the fact that the Kings Meadow cameraman maybe had a few drinks the night before, I don't know how anybody could be certain. Like, I kind of see, and like I'm watching the replay right now, I can kind of see where she may be a step or two off. But again, given the camera angle, it's almost impossible to tell. So like, I don't know what was going on with that. But either way, it was a run that started basically in midfield and not tracked all the way to the front of the goal. That can't happen. That's the thing that like Chelsea just doesn't do.
Yeah, I also feel like we didn't quite learn from that situation, because leading up from that moment then to halftime, Bremer was very easily able to not only just out-muscle the back four, and I think there was an incident where she almost scored and she got past Charles, but also the ability to pick out the spaces in which she or even the Brighton attackers knew that Chelsea would make mistakes in. And that's the worrying thing when it becomes predictable. And I think Emma knew that as well, because as you say rightly, we changed to a back four. Buchanan came off and Canride came on, and straight away the stability was there. But is that something that we should be worrying about this early in the season? That, you know, it was so easy for Brighton, a team who have really struggled. A team that last week Mia said that she was very pleased we were facing, was able to kind of not only out-muscle us, but also out when in terms of duels, I think they had 42 and we had 39.
No, I mean, to be honest, I'm actually pretty high on Brighton. I thought they made some really good moves this summer. And mm-hmm. I think they finally, like, the thing I've kind of been begging Brighton to do as a team, just for like their own, like adding to the league as a whole, is treat their women's team the way they treat their men's team. We know how Brighton operates on their men's team. You know, they're very clinical when they go after players. They kind of find players to bring on that they know or have a very high, like, upward trajectory. And I thought that a lot of their moves in the summer did this same thing. Obviously, there are players that were veterans that were brought in that aren't like upward mm-hmm. trajectory, but you still need a combination of both. And so I think this Brighton team is interesting. Like, do I think they're going to be like top five or six? No, but I think they're going to be an interesting team. And so I don't necessarily mind a challenge like this, especially as long as we win. And also, as mentioned, I'm never worried about Chelsea like this early in the season, just because we've been here so many times. Like, they grind out results. Eventually things come together. Players get fully fit. They get better integrated. And then, like, the Chelsea we're talking about now in October is not going to play or look anything like the Chelsea, hopefully, not look anything like the Chelsea we talk about in February, March, April.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, though. It's always amazing when we see them produce results at the top end, but when we have to actually, like, fight for results and really push ourselves to score, I think those are the moments in which it's just much more entertaining and much more rewarding. And I think I kind of felt that way having looked back at the game. And as you say, seeing how difficult that first half was and then it ending, it's always nice when it ends right there, the death. And I think Nusken's first goal was so Sam Kerr coded. And especially mentioned to Jess Carter, by the way, because her cross was fiery. It was whipped in hard, and it was hard. It needed a hard header. I think that was the combination. And Nusken rose up high, just like Sam Kerr would, and it was in the back of the net. And straight away, you could just sense that something has shifted slightly.
Yeah, it really is one of those things where they always say, like, the best times to, like, alter the game state are, like, first part of the game, first 5 minutes of the game, or on either side of halftime, or right at the end, you know, second half stoppage time, or right before regulation time. And, like, it was, they needed to score. If Brighton goes in to the half up 1-0, I do not think we get the result we get. We needed to score, especially mm-hmm. given the way it had gone, because it was a very frustrating half. Brighton scored early. And just, I did the math. I looked at this because FB Ref, thank you so much. We'll put XG now, shot by shot, on their pages. And so I checked out their page. Chelsea in the first half has 17 shots. 10 of those shots were on target. 7 of those shots were had like a post shot, so actually had to be saved. Uh-huh. Their total XG from those 17 shots was 2.88. Okay. All right. The 7 shots, just from 7 shots, was 2.3. It was getting very frustrating that Sophie Bagley, she was doing a great job, but also just chaos was happening and the ball just wouldn't go across the line. Brighton were defending for their lives, so credit to them. But there's no way that, like, Chelsea's heads wouldn't have dropped a little bit if you go into halftime not having equalized, because it started to feel like one of those games until Nusken mm-hmm. scored. Which mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you, when Jess Carter had the ball on the touchline that wide, I was like, what is she doing? Like, what's happening? Because she's like spinning around. And I was like, what's happening? She's not really like a tricky winger of sort, but she was able to find space. And then she put in a great ball. And Nusken in the box? Who knew that was going to be a thing?
Yeah, and I think we have to give credit to Emma Hayes, because she also made that change to a back four. And I think that was so much, like, that was just as important as the attacking changes and the attacking moves, because I think it's just a shame. I feel like Buchanan is really struggles in that role. And again, it's the start of the season, so we have to give some leeway to her as well. But playing out from the, having AKB, who, as you mentioned, maybe isn't our best distributor, plus Buchanan in there, and the fact that Bright was quite preoccupied and having to come across in either way in a back three, I think it wasn't working. As soon as we made that change, the attacking midfield opened up, because they weren't having to track back and cover the space in which Bremer had scored the opening goal. So I just feel that completely changed the game, and it really meant that our midfield now Perez, they could get further up. Now Charles and Nusken could actually contribute, and Ingle could just sit in the middle. And a little, like, it's, you know, I've had issues with Ingle before, where I feel like sometimes she's not able to kind of track everything that's going on around her, but it's so much easier when you have that stability. And that second goal from Niskanen, and it was a really beautiful free-flowing move. You know, I'm pretty sure it was Kirby to Kane-Ryder to Kerr to Niskanen, and it was just, that's what it came from, the ability to open yourself up. And I just don't feel that was possible in the first half because we looked so shaky in the back.
Yeah, in the first half, it felt more like trying to like just force the ball over the line, you know, mm-hmm. just put it in a dangerous area, try to get a bunch of bodies in the box and just try to make sure you get some sort of touch to get the ball across the line. We didn't have a lot of free flowing play, which again, it's formation, you know, a bit new faces, new teammates, you know, playing. I also didn't expect Sophie Ingle to be like our starting DM for like the mm-hmm. entire season thus far, which is interesting because I feel like Niskanen's position on this team is fascinating because when we signed her, we were really excited. We're like, perfect. Our defensive midfield is set. She played center back, you know, for the German national team. It looks like, you know, this is a defensive minded player. And Emma Hayes recently has said she's kind of an 8, kind of a 10. Uh-huh. And so not really looking at her as a defensive midfielder, which kind of shocks me. But I guess if she's going to score goals like this and be a presence in the box, and you know, we're Chelsea. We absolutely love a box crashing midfielder. So, you know, I'm here for it. It's just now I have the question of, okay, what are we doing at defensive midfield beyond Sophie Ingle? And I also feel a bit bad for Khadija Buchanan because I don't think she's been able to really find her footing here at Chelsea over the past couple seasons since she's gotten here. And I don't love that. I think she's great. And I thought having her in the team for her ability to drive up the pitch and help with distribution, she's very good at that, especially carrying the ball. That's something we missed with Magda Eriksson being gone. And it doesn't seem to stick. So the fact that she was the one that came off after 45 minutes, I was like, ooh, that's probably not good. But who knows? I mean, she can end up being our starter for the rest of the season. Honestly, at this point in the season, it's really hard to tell.
And I think we also need to understand, like, there's going to be a lot of rotating. Like, that's kind of how it's going to be at some time. Some players won't be ready for it. Others will. And it's just having to understand which players are. I mean, I know we just talked about the fact that it seems strange that our defensive midfield holder is Ingle. We've got Leupoldt, Kankovic, Hanna Svitkova has been injured for quite a while, but we've got options, and those options seem to be coming off the bench. Kankovic came off in the 55th minute. Fleming came on, and I know she's more of an attacking sort of midfielder, but just generally in the last couple of games, these players have been coming off 55 minutes onwards. So it's just kind of interesting to understand whether those players aren't ready for the style that we're trying to play, or whether actually we're trying to up the intensity and bring them on later to stabilize how we're playing. And I think that in terms of having Niskanen in there as somebody who's contributing more towards the goals, having that many attackers just means that there's going to be an opportunity at some point, right? Although she's meant to be the number 10, we've also got other players. Kirby, Kerr and James all were playing kind of like in this sort of deeper role, especially Sam Kerr. I feel like that's the biggest thing I noticed. Sam Kerr took a back seat. She was provider. She assisted two of the three Niskanen goals. And it was kind of strange because usually wherever Sam Kerr goes, she's the main event. But it was also kind of nice to see the fact that she can be allowed to do that, that she can rest a little bit, that she can reserve herself, and that there is backup. And not only Niskanen, but also Fischl as well. We keep forgetting about her. There's just more options in an attacking sense. So I think maybe that's kind of, at least what it seems like to me, the idea that we play more attacking football, but we have more stable players to bring off the bench rather than the opposite, which is starting out with stability and bringing on more attacking. I don't know. I mean, we could sit here and probably speculate for hours and hours, but I just feel like it's given us more security, and sometimes that might mean being a little less creative.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, like we said earlier, it's injury, it's form some for some players, you know, new players trying to integrate into the team. I mean, one of our, who we expect to be a star of the team, especially if we're going to go deep into the Champions League, is going to be Katarina Macario, and we haven't seen her yet, you know, and not expecting to because of her. She's still recovering from her ACL injury. Hopefully we get to see her before the new year. But still, like, I think right now what Emma Hayes is looking at is like, can I trust you in these positions? And That's interesting. You know, in a back three, maybe it wasn't working with Carter, Bright, and Buchanan. So Buchanan comes off. So, okay, I can't do that. Like, that doesn't really work. Neve Charles, we talked about her. She's been great at the beginning of the season, which, you know, she started a Champions League final and it did not go well. And Emma Hayes has stuck with her. And she's grown and grown in that position. And she looks like she's doing quite well. You know, she didn't have an assist against Brighton, so shame on her. But, you know, it's fine because she's been great the rest of the campaign. So, like, I think it's just about that. Like, I do not expect Nuskin, if everybody's fit, to be like our 10 pretty mm-hmm. frequently, right? She's not going to be playing that role. But maybe when you do need to trust a midfielder, maybe she's playing as a box-to-box 8 or something else, you do get that late runner and she's accomplished and can come up with a big goal later on. So good to know she can fill in that role and do these sorts of things. That's kind of where I'm thinking Emma Hayes is going with this, because she's forced into a lot of changes, but also she's testing players, seeing what mm-hmm. they can do and how they might be able to help the team in the future, other than saying like, this is my starting 11. This is what we're always going to put out here. Here's how we're going to play. Here's who we're going to feed the ball to, always to be to Sam Kerr. And like you, to your last point, Sam Kerr being able to play provider now is kind of fun. Her assisting Shoka Nuskin is amazing, because we didn't really see that coming. We thought maybe Nuskin would get a couple assists to Kerr, but it happening the other way around and twice in the same game is kind of a fun little wrinkle that now teams would have to worry about.
And it kind of reminds me of that tweet, I think, that was going over the weekend, where it's meant to be like a joke tweet, where it's Emma Hayes talking and people have put in like other managers in, she's giving the pep talk, which was pretty funny. Yes. But she said that there was a bit there, she said that really resonated with me, which was, do your job or I'll find someone else, or something along those lines. And I think we forget that there is, you know, as warm and lovely she is to her players and she takes care of them, there's this other edge of competitiveness. A bigger squad means that you have to fight for your place. And I think whenever we see weird changes or weird tactical stuff, that's probably what it is, likely that, you know, she's forcing her players to play as well as they possibly can be. And Nuskin doing well this week probably means that, again, there's competition elsewhere. Players realize that this is another addition. So, you know, I think in another sense, it's a good thing, like having players fight for where they might be able to play. And so, in addition to your point about form and injury, this is probably another element to it. And the players you do see playing, you can see that how well they are thriving. And actually, one of them is Fran Kirby, who I just feel like since she's come back from injury, she's just looked, and we say it every time, she just looks like she hasn't been injured. She's playing free-flowing attacking football. She's combining well with Kerr and Nuskin. And even when she was playing with Fischl and James, it looked so natural. And she should have had a goal. I mean, she hit the post twice against Brighton. The first one was just amazing. I mean, you're right, saying Bagley was having just, you know, before we scored any of our goals and it was 1-0, she was having an amazing game. But I just feel like it's working for Fran. She's had that big surgery on her knee. She's in the best fitness of her life. Could this be the season where, it sounds weird to say, I don't even want to finish the sentence, is this the season where she becomes good? She's already amazing, but I mean, is this a season where she becomes unhindered by the things that have affected her?
I mean, anytime we get Fran Kirby on the like return, you know, from anything, she's incredible. And so I actually really loved the wrinkle where she was more central, because I just think she plays that role for England quite often, or used to, but, and I assume still will when she's back with the team. But like, I just love her finding pockets, getting on the ball and turning, because her doing that, doesn't matter if she's closer to the center circle than the box, especially if she's closer to the box, it just absolutely terrifies defenses because she is so quick. She's so, like, her acceleration is ridiculous. She's an extremely good with her dribbling and close control, can go either way, can shoot with either foot, is also creative enough to spray a pass inside the box when you have runners on either side, especially if those runners are like maybe Lauren James, maybe with Guro when she's back, maybe Katarina Macario, maybe Sam Kerr, you know, or maybe Shoka Nuskin coming from midfield, right? Like, she just has so many options. Mm-hmm. And her in that space is like perfect. That's what I want to see. We'll see what happens when Macario gets on the pitch. I feel like she might take that central role, but I still wouldn't mind like having them a lot of rotation, because Macario, that's the great thing about her. When she's with the team, she's so versatile that like they could do so much interchanging and interplay between one another. And it would be, every single move would look seamless because she's just, they're both incredibly smart players. So I loved watching Fran in this game. I thought she was great. I wish she could have gotten a goal because she deserves it. Mm-hmm. And honestly, when she does get her goal, the Fran Kirby Fight Club, or perhaps Shokanuskin Fight Club Twitter account is ready to go bonkers, because I'm waiting for it. I need it, Fran.
Yeah, we're just, the thing is, it's going to be coming in the next couple of days, next couple of weeks even. It just has to. She's just in the form of her life and so many options around her. It's scary to think that even some of our players are injured, like you mentioned, Kat Macari still injured, still recovering from an ACL. Fran Kirby still coming through. And I've got ex-Chelsea players on my mind today, but this is the effect that Fran Kirby has on us. It's just a little scary as well, because you're right in saying in a couple of months when we've fixed and kind of smoothed out all the kinks, if you will, that's when we'll kind of have a good idea of what Chelsea look like and whether they can actually go the distance, not just in the league and get a fifth consecutive title, but in the Champions League as well.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that's the case. And I'm excited to see the team with everybody fully fit and healthy. I hope we get there. Aaron Cuthbert's injury that kind of won't go away is concerning. I hope that becomes okay. Like I mentioned earlier, hope Guro is okay, because that she's like an irreplaceable player. Like, we really don't, like, I don't think any team really has that kind of profile. She's such a unique player. I mean, you can have, talented wingers on the left, but given the things that she does and her pinpoint crossing, her understanding of how to play that role wide is, and when to drift inside, she doesn't really beat players like, with pace or anything like that. It's a very different kind of way that she does, that she plays that role, and she's so great at it. And it's such an asset. And of course, we talked about Macario. I think Loopholes was actually injured for this game as well. So she wasn't on the bench. So, I'm hoping to get back to some full fitness so we can start to see it kind of turn a bit. And, there's always mm-hmm. that period of time where Emma Hayes is like, okay, I figured out my team now. Here's how we play. Here's how we want to play. Here's who we go with. And I think we're probably a few games away from that. But, if everybody gets healthy, we might start to see the real Chelsea that we should expect to see the rest of the season, late November, maybe December. We'll see.
Well, fingers crossed. We do have an international break coming up now. So we've got a while to see how exactly we recover on the other side of that, knowing that that's kind of been an issue in previous seasons. And when we return, we will be facing Aston Villa. That's Saturday, the 4th of November, lunchtime kickoff, 12:30 p.m. I've got to ask for your quick predictions on that. I know it's a while away. We might do another preview in that time, but I just feel like another team that have yet to win in the WSL, 4 defeats out of 4, maybe they were a little bit unlucky to not get a result against Arsenal or United, but Spurs, who we pushed past, did throw them around a little bit. So I'm hoping for an easy win. I think it's going to be 3-0. What about you?
Oh, yeah. I feel bad for this Aston Villa side, because they came in with so many expectations and it just hasn't gone well, but they have had a difficult start. They played Manchester United, lost that 2-1. They played Liverpool, which may not seem like a big deal, but Liverpool has very much improved. That was a 2-0 loss. Arsenal, it was only 2-1. And then, as you mentioned, Tottenham really got to them. So they're having a very poor start to their season. And I know that if you're having a poor start to your season, you can turn that around really quickly, at least with the fans, by getting a win over Chelsea. And with an international break, this also concerns me. They'll have some players gone too, but mm-hmm. we'll have a ton more gone. And I always worry about the game back from an international break, no matter what. So I don't think I'm going to go a big scoreline, 3-0, though I'd love to see it. I'm going to probably say 2-1.
Oh, you're expecting a tight game.
I am.
Just what we love to see on the other side of an international break.
Well, right. And that's the problem. I mean, you got to make sure everybody comes back healthy. They come back, fit as well, ready to play minutes. They weren't overused with their national team. There's so many things to think about. And you're facing a pretty, at this point of the season, they've got to be quite desperate, Aston Villa, at the moment, because they are second from the bottom. Only Bristol City is below them, and their goal differential is horrendous. It's -6, and Bristol's is -10. So, they have not had a good start to their season, and they're not going to play like this. The the entire season. And so I am a little worried about this game.
Well, we hope it goes all well. And I think that's going to be the end of today's podcast. But hopefully on the other side of the international break, we will be coming back with a preview of that game. And as always, we always appreciate every listen, every comment, every review. And please do feel free to reach out to us. We are looking to mix things up, adding more guests, kind of have different types of content. So any suggestions or even like recommendations on what you think we should be doing, do let us know. We do love the extra input, and we will hopefully catch you on the other side of the international break. Hopefully it's 3-0 and not a very scary 10-2-1.